Good morning, everybody. Sorry for the music lasting so long. Having trouble with my microphone and a couple other things this morning. But I have a great sport on with you, with us today to do the show. It's amazing. Our call-in line was down, so we had to go to an alternative method, and amazingly, it worked. So I'll be able to bring on Kirsten Carr, who's from the Council of Chief State School Officers. She's their senior program director of student expectations, an interesting title this year. We'll talk to Kirsten about that. Okay, we're going to talk about some of CCSSO's, the Council of Chief State School Officers, restart and recovery considerations for reopening schools. And we know, and Kirsten's going to talk about this, that it has to change, obviously, state by state. We don't have any blanket policy, but we're going to go and see what CCSSO is saying about it and what they're hearing from their incredible state superintendents. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio. And I forgot to say, I'm Larry Jacobs, but I think you know that today is July 22nd. 22nd? Yeah, 22nd. Hold on. This is 23rd, 22nd. There we go. 22nd. Couldn't see. Okay. 2020. We're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalk Radio. Please go over and check out our consortium for equity. It's the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at our other website, ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Okay, everything we do over there is free for educators. It's a K-12 consortium where educators and industry can meet and bring about equity and accessibility to learning for all students. We're growing like crazy. We want you aboard, your voice heard. Please, ace-ed.org. And by the way, that includes a subscription to our magazine, which is called Equity and Access, ACNE, Equity and Access. It's right over there at the website, and I think you'll enjoy it. Without further ado, who's been very quiet while she's listening? Kirsten, are you there?
I am. Hi, Larry.
Hi, and Kirsten and I had some phone calls prior to the show. We were able to get this together. I'm amazed I was able to make I'm a technological genius, Kirsten. I was able to get this to work. Thank you for being a sport and letting me listen and babble on while you were so quiet and so good. You must have been very good in school.
I don't know about that. But I know we're all learning on the fly a lot here, so appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is a great title you have, Kirsten Carr. That's the Senior Program Director of Student Expectations. And student expectations have to be changing right now. Before we get into all these other things about restart and recovery, which is another story I want to tell you, okay? But it's really interesting. What's going on with student expectations? People like to call what we're doing remote learning. And I like to call it remote education until we find out if people are actually learning, okay? And I hope they do. Everybody's trying their best. What's going on with student expectations from the CCSSO point of view?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I can tell you I have a 4- and 6-year-old at home, so I'm kind of living this myself as well. So I hear you.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah. I think we've been working really closely with our members to kind of navigate and figure out how we prepare to plan and launch and sustain a strong school year and what that looks like and what that means. I think they're really focused on setting up every student for success, kind of balancing that with health and safety. And so really, as you say, rethinking what our student expectations are and how to provide support to make sure all the students are still getting what they need to be successful.
Yeah, it's really difficult out there. In fact, you had a show coming up on Friday with, you probably know her, Joni Hebert, who is the Nevada State Superintendent, and some of the things that they're doing out there. Okay?
Yeah.
Every state is different. Okay? And we have to just go along with that. And by the way, I congratulate you, a 4- to 6-year-old, Kirsten. 4- to 6-year-old?
4- and 6-year-old, yes. Yep, they're keeping me on my toes here.
And I got to tell you, I don't know where they are right now. Obviously, they're at home, but they're so good and so quiet that you were able to do all that. Thank you. This is great. You're a good mommy. Good mommy.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, TV helps too, but yeah.
That's funny. And it does. It helped my mother back in 1954, so I guess I can still say it's helping these days too. That's actually funny, but I'm glad the kids are really, really good. Would you like to do a shout out so they can hear mommy say their names on the radio?
That's okay. We don't want to distract them too much now. They'll come running.
Okay, good. Okay, we don't want that. We don't want that. So tell the kids they're doing good. Uncle Larry says hello. Okay, CCSSO, as I said, I got a fun cute story to tell you. I had a gentleman on a week or so ago, and he's getting his doctorate already. He's a very interesting expert on narrow reading. And Sir Robert's from India. And I mentioned to him the three R's, okay? And he said, well, I know restart and recovery. What's the third one? And I said, Sir Rob, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the three R's. And he said, what three R's? And I said, reading, writing, and arithmetic. He goes, what does that got to do with the letter R? Because only one of them starts with R. And he's from India. And it dawned on me that we say that as a cliche, but the world has no idea what we're talking about. Okay, mm-hmm. So the three R's. The real three R's are two R's this year, restart and recovery. Okay, for reopening. Actually, there's three. Restart, recovery, reopening, schools. Okay, what's going on? What are you hearing from? What is CCSSO doing? And what are you hearing from the varied superintendents?
Yeah, sure. So I think we've been spending a lot of time working with our members, engaging with them, trying to figure out what their needs are. And as we moved through kind of the spring and into the summer, started thinking about what does it look like to have a successful launch in the fall, and trying to understand what their kind of new, what was bubbling up for them, what kept them up at night, what were they thinking about. Kind of we were learning on the fly through the spring, and then how do you then take that and prepare for the fall? So I think, as you said a couple of times, we know every state's different. You know, Maryland's different from Maine, different from Texas. But there were some common challenges that we started to hear. And so as an organization, we just wanted to help with that. And so kind of really taking advantage of the power of collaboration in this moment to say, how can we take some of these challenges we're hearing from you that you're facing in the fall, put together some guidance, some resources that will help you navigate this incredibly complex situation that you can then take, make your own, use what you need, don't use what's not useful for you, and just help all of us kind of find our way so that we have a strong start to the school year. So from that, we put together some guidance documents that are considerations for teaching and learning resources that we've just kind of released out to the field last week.
Okay. And this is interesting. The role of the state superintendent, I'm going to use, and this has been in the news, it's political, but we're not going to do it from a political point of view. Florida, okay? Florida, the governor, and I'm not sure about the state superintendent, I don't know who that is in Florida, but they're asking that schools reopen, okay? But I know for a fact Broward and Miami-Dade are not reopening. I think they're the two biggest districts down there. I don't know about other districts, but how much, and I don't know how to ask this question, how much sway, how much power, what's the role, maybe that's the way to do it, of the chief state school officer in this pandemic crisis? Well, what does CCSSO see as the role?
Yeah, so I think we, for purposes of this work that we're talking about today, it's really focused on the considerations for the teaching and learning, and I can dig into that a little bit more. But we know that state and local leaders are working closely with their communities and health experts to determine kind of what works and what makes sense within their environment. And as you said, again, you know, that can look different across the country. But in terms of that piece, yeah, we know they're working really closely, and that the health and safety is just a number one priority for our members and for our chiefs, and trying to figure out how to move forward. So, and then I think when we think more about so that's one piece. Some of the work that we've really been focused on is kind of what then does it look like once the decision is made about health and safety and what the learning environment looks like. So as we've been working with states and trying to prepare them with kind of reopening school, we've been looking at it across different models. So the resources that we released look at in-person, hybrid, and remote, recognizing that that's going to look different in every place, and kind of pick up the conversation there in terms of what does it actually look like when we start to get back into school in whatever form that looks like.
Yeah, and it's so hard. And everybody, I have to say, by the way, every chief you guys have set me up with, every chief I've talked to has been just a wonderful person. I haven't disliked, in fact, I have overwhelmingly liked each and every one of them, and I know, I'm serious. And, that, you know, some people might think that they're aloof or something like that. They're not. And to a person, from at least the ones I've met, okay, they really do give a damn about everything every day, and now this crisis has hit, and they're trying to make things right for everybody, okay, and have the kids learn, et cetera. And this is odd, you don't have to say this today, but what's been your favorite type of plan so far? What are you hearing in that regard. What's your favorite?
Yeah.
Kirsten.
No, I think I would just underscore what you said about the members. I think they are so deeply committed to education, students, you know, the equity, making sure they're meeting the needs of the vulnerable students. Like, all of that has been such a priority to them, and they have been working so tirelessly on all of that. So I appreciate you saying that. I think that that really has been
true.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to see, you know, and then we're starting to see what different plans look like. And I think those, you know, those vary. So I think different elements, as we've talked about, kind of work differently for different communities. And so I think what we've just really appreciated is everybody working to figure out what meets the needs of their respective communities and how we can all be supportive of getting, again, to kind of some of that strong teaching and learning going into the school year.
Yeah, it's really just something that they all have to deal with. And boy, I kind of feel sorry. I mean, that's why they get paid the big bucks, as the old cliche goes. But boy, what a crazy time to have to do this. And let me ask you another thing, and this is a key thing that, again, has been coming up. All right, we're very concerned. We're going to talk about this in more detail. And you're the senior director of student expectations. About the students, what about the teachers? What are you hearing in regard to teachers? Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. No, that is also a critical focus of the support we're providing. So as part of these kind of guidance documents that we released last week, there are a couple of different elements to them, and one kind of three buckets. One is on systems conditions, which we can talk more about, kind of how do you set up the school, access to technology, things like that. One is on academics, which you can come back to. But really, there's also a big focus on well-being and connection. And very deliberately in that it focuses on how we're ensuring, you know, supporting well-being and connection for both the school staff and for students. And that we recognize, you know, staff are coming into this in very different places with all sorts of different considerations. And so making that a number one priority in terms of thinking through how we're supporting them, how we're engaging with them, making sure attending to their needs. So I think that is a critical element to this conversation.
Well, every time I ask a question and get a great answer like that, it's just, you know, you keep peeling away the layers of the, quote, onion, okay? And it's just such a deep and complicated situation that we have right now. And every educator, I got to say this, has been doing their damnedest to make this work, okay? That goes from your chief state school officer down to the teacher aide in kindergarten. Okay, everybody's been working as hard as they can to make something that we never figured was going to happen work. It's just amazing. You actually have a resource, don't you, over on the website or somewhere?
We do. Yeah, we do. We do. It's kind of a set of documents that we're calling our considerations for teaching and learning that start to get into some of these issues, and happy to dig into those as is helpful.
What are they? What's the big issues? Is safety top of the list?
Yeah, so we kind of, the health and safety piece, because that is such a, like, dependent on local scenarios, we don't get into the details of that in these resources. These are really focused on kind of what does it look like when you prepare for the school year. So it's getting, so there's kind of the three big buckets are your systems conditions. So, like, how are you thinking about, again, making sure you're engaging with your communities? How are you thinking about making sure everybody has access to the technology they need? How are you thinking about schedules and staffing? So kind of getting in place the pieces that you need for that. The second big bucket is the one I talked about just a moment ago, this well-being and connection. So trying to look at how are you making sure you're attending to the needs. And then the third piece, and we see these all as very interrelated, is the academics piece. So kind of how, when students come back in whatever form that looks like, how do you kind of understand where your students are in their learning and provide the support they need to continue moving forward with grade level content as much as possible? And then how, related to that, like, what professional learning do you need to provide to your educators to support them in this new scenario?
One thing leads to the other, leads to the other, leads to the other. It's just an absolutely incredibly complicated thing that we really have to get right. What are you hearing from the superintendents? And to do all this and to do all this right, and in the end, I don't know how the balance sheet is going to work out, but obviously this is going to take dollars. And schools, unfortunately, education is always the first thing to go. It's always, for some stupid reason, at the bottom of the list, okay? And I'm curious, how are they doing? What do you hear from them funding-wise? And I know you're going to have 50 different answers, but I'm just curious, what are you hearing? how they're going about getting more money to
do this. I will preface this with that's definitely not my deep area of expertise in terms of working on the funding side, but I will say we know, you know, as an organization, we know that schools will need more money to open safely and serve all kids. We know that's a priority. CTSO sent a letter to Congress last month estimating it would cost between $158 billion to $244 billion to safely reopen schools and provide technology to kids who need it, address any learning loss, and fill in possible shortfalls in state and local tax revenue. So it's something we've definitely been advocating for and appreciate that there is a deep need for that.
They have to do it, and I remind everybody that they gave $50 million, they being the U.S. government, gave $50 billion to the airlines, okay? And then they threatened to close schools if they don't reopen on time. No, that's not the way we do it. We need the money. We need the money to get this right because this is a whole new paradigm here, okay? Don't give it to one and not give it to the one that we need, where we need it the most. The healthcare and education are just so important. And talk about what you're learning about access, equity and learning, distance learning, all that sort of stuff. And that is your bailiwick, Kirsten. You're the director of student expectations. What's going on with that of the world?
I can't do the balance sheet, but I can talk about that. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, please. Do that. Okay.
So I think the equity concerns have just been critical throughout, even prior to this crisis, but now more than ever. As an organization, it's been something we talk about a lot. It's something our members are deeply committed to. And as we've kind of put together these resources that, again, start to help navigate how you look to reopening schools, that's been front and center. So one of our guiding principles has really been designing for equity. So thinking about how do you address the learning needs of the vulnerable populations that are most impacted by this crisis, so including students with low-income families, students of color, students with disabilities, English learners, homeless youth, and those, you know, who have experienced some form of trauma. So as we look to, for example, providing support on academics, we've tried to build in a lot of examples of how you can best meet the needs of different student populations who may have different experiences. So, for example, we try to include links on how you support students with disabilities in online and blended learning that we've taken from the Michigan Virtual Learning Research Institute. And looking at how you think about for English learners, like making sure that they have some time, some live synchronous instruction, since we know that their language development requires that. So we've really tried to build some of those considerations in throughout and provide as much support and guidance as we know how to at this time.
There you go. Okay. I honestly believe this is going to be a real challenge for this, okay, for kids, English language learners, kids with disabilities, et cetera. Because when we talk about education, just in general, here in the news, we think of just the typical child, okay, the average child. But there are so many kids with so many special needs, okay, in these times, and some of them don't have access. It's really just absolutely incredible. Are you seeing that they're let me ask you a different question. How are they planning to do assessment? What are you hearing about assessment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think you kind of can talk about that in different ways. But another thing that the guidance really tries to get into is thinking about how you're trying to understand where students are when they come back, you know, again, come back in whatever form that looks like, and trying to think about it from a real instructional purpose. So how do you understand where they are as part of kind of the formative assessment process to look at where they are and where they might need additional support, and really targeting at least initially on that focus for, again, how does that really inform your instruction?
It's so tough. What's your background in all this? Well, besides your current job, obviously, but obviously you're well qualified for it. What's your background, Kirsten?
Yeah, so I had worked with CTSO for, it's hard to believe, about 11 years now. So I've spent a lot of time kind of working with states on that. Prior to that, I have a legal background, but also worked in Boston in an organization there working with some of the schools within the Boston Public School System as well.
You're from Boston? Is that where you work?
I'm from Western Mass, but then I lived in Boston for 3 years. Yeah, and I understand you're up in Maine. I love Maine, one of my favorite spots. How is it up there?
It's okay. We're one of the states that's doing pretty well right now. I'm pretty happy. Meanwhile, I'm having a coughing fit, if you can believe this. I don't know, that's why I keep turning my mic off.
No problem.
That clicking sound. I don't know why. All of a sudden, my throat got scratchy. All right, so I've been doing that, and I apologize if that's been annoying people. Yeah, but if I didn't turn the mic off, it would be a lot worse. I can guarantee you that. Okay?
It just, Fair enough.
Just amazing. So who did you work for in Boston when you were here? Working with? Did you work for BS?
Oh, no, I worked for the Boston Plan for Excellence. So we worked, it was a nonprofit organization. We worked closely with BPS, but yeah, it was kind of, so we worked with about a quarter of the schools at that time. So yeah, it was an amazing experience. Spent a lot of time in the schools and just kind of and seeing all the great things that were happening in Boston at that time.
Yeah, and I hope they still are. You know, I'm sure you're well aware of the news and all that, but it's really just interesting what's going on in Boston right now. I hope they do all right with the reopening, et cetera. You know, there's another side of this besides academics, and you mentioned this a few minutes ago. We'll call it social-emotional learning. How is the state school officers working with social-emotional learning in these crazy times? And I have to say, there's going to be a lot of trauma. A, kids all of a sudden have been at home. They've been socially isolated, and kids need friends, okay, yet they've been socially isolated, all right? A lot of kids, especially in urban areas, et cetera, have lost family members, okay, from COVID. We can't forget that. While the schools are closed, there is a pandemic going on. 140,000 or so people have died, all right? People are sick right now down in Texas. What's the word on social-emotional? What's the thoughts from CCSSO?
Yeah, that is critically important for all of the reasons you say. And I think, so as we thinking about support in this area, again, kind of the resources that we're putting out are for state leaders, but also really for district and system leaders to think about this.
Yeah.
We kind of call it the well-being and connection piece, but we really do try to get into, how are you, really focusing on those needs and prioritizing those needs. So getting to levels of specificity, thinking through, for example, when you are bringing your staff back, how do you kind of engage, help them reconnect and heal through at least a one staff-led community connection opportunity before you even get into your professional activities or meetings. And then for students, how are you thinking about creating a plan to promote positive relationships, ensuring that students have a meaningful interaction with an adult every day. So to that, I think that's exactly right. That has to be front of mind. It's so important. And so trying to get really specific, especially in the remote environment, trying to think about how you can maintain those personal connections during this time. So I think that is a huge priority.
I agree with you, because if we don't get that right, we're going to have a lot more problems down the line. All right. The social emotional thing has always been important, and it's come to light in the last 5-6 years, full strength. But now we're going to pay the price for if we didn't do it, because we have to have the staff, et cetera, ready to go with this. All right. Because there is going to be a lot of trauma coming down the pike, et cetera, you know. And, you asked me to ask this question, but it's an odd question. You know, you created the resource. Why did you feel you had to do that for the chief state school officers? What was the impetus behind it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think as we've been talking about, it's on everybody's mind how to kind of plan and launch and sustain a strong school year. Everybody's talking about it at dinner, from the news to everything. So as we kind of went through the spring, saw what worked, saw where there were challenges, we just kept talking to our members, talking especially to the superintendents, but also the chief academic officers, the chief talent officers, and just tried to get a sense from them, what are the key issues that you see coming this fall? What keeps bubbling up for you? What keeps you up in the middle of the night? And then looking across, and how, where their work.
The better question is what clears your mind to go to sleep in the middle of the night?
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Yeah.
Hopefully some of this supports us. I don't know though. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. Good point. Good point.
And just recognizing that this is so complicated. So that, I think that was really it. We wanted to help them, and we were able to bring together some experts from the field to just start putting pen to paper. As you've said multiple times, this is just incredibly complicated. So that was really it. How can we provide some resources, some thinking on this that, again, we fully expect people to take, customize, use what works, make it their own based on their unique context, but just as some starting points as we're all kind of navigating this complicated new world together.
Yeah, it is a complicated new world, brave new world, and we've got to make it work. Okay, somehow or the other, we're going to learn as we go, etc. And I think we can say this, it's ccsso.org, and again, it's Chief State School Officers, but who do you want, who's the intended audience for all this work?
That's a great question. So in general, as an organization, we support the state education leaders, as you said, and then, we know obviously their role is to in turn support the district and school leaders, and so for these resources, there's some elements that are relevant for kind of state policy considerations, but they're also intended to send kind of system leaders. It starts to get pretty specific, and some of the decisions that are in there are more relevant for that audience, but our goal is to support basically our members in supporting their districts across their state. So it's a couple different audiences there, but really hopefully can help work through some of those problems as you're really thinking about what your system will look like come a couple of weeks.
Come a couple of weeks because, as we know, Florida and I think Nevada open up pretty soon, okay?
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, it's just brutal. This is going to be an odd question. I'm not asking. I don't want you to play favorites. So just more objectively than playing favorites, okay? And I don't know if we can even answer a question. Which state, so to speak, has been the shining star so far? Okay, have there been any of them that truly stand out? And I recognize like Wyoming doesn't have as many challenges as does Florida, but just from what you're hearing, which state can we look to if such a thing exists?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think states are leading in different ways in different areas, and I think all are just kind of working really hard on the issues and meeting kind of the challenges that they are facing in particular. So I think we've seen strong things across states, and so part of what we try to do as an organization, and we're fortunate to be able to do this, is to bring states together to share. So I think one of the benefits that we've been able
Good
to
point.
Do is we host calls with chiefs weekly. They can just come on and say, hey, how are you handling, whatever it is, and learn from each other in real time. So I think we've found that to be a huge benefit so that we have a real opportunity for cross-state collaboration at a quick pace so that we can learn from the different areas where different folks are leading.
And what are they saying? And I have a feeling I know the answer. What are they saying about masks? And masks, and I'm all in favor of them, but masks have become a controversy. And I believe the scientists, I believe we need them, okay? But let's face it, some states are more conservative than others. Okay, what are you hearing about masks being mandated? I think it's everywhere, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, the area I'm less deeply engaged in those types of conversations. So I will say, and not to pun on it, but I will say I do know like our members are just deeply committed to the health and safety of educators, students, and families. So I couldn't quite get into the nuance of all of that, but I do know that at an underlying basis, they want people to stay healthy.
They do indeed. And I asked the question just hoping that there would be some kind of a consensus. I think the consensus probably among the chief state school officers is probably wear masks in school. Okay. And we'll just see what happens. And my other favorite thing, we always say, let's have school reopen. And I like to say, let's have education reopen. Okay. And whatever form it takes, it doesn't have to be in the physical building, whatever form it takes, we're the ones who are going to get work. It's that simple. Okay.
Exactly right. And I think we're trying to account for all of those, like whatever that learning environment is, like we still got to push forward. And I agree with you completely.
Yeah. And we got to assess those kids and make it work. And we're going to do that. It's that simple. We're going to do it. Okay.
Yep,
with
I
the
like
parents
that.
Help.
Hey, we made this call work. We can do it. Yeah.
The chance of us making this, actually, if that is an example of education going forward, I am thrilled that this worked. Okay, so that's a good omen for education across the board. Kirsten, this is great, right? Are you down in Washington now? Is that where you live?
In Maryland, yep, right outside of Washington, yes.
Well, please stay safe. Where are you, in Montgomery County or somewhere? Where are you?
In Montgomery County, yep.
Okay, good luck. It's a big school district down there. What are they saying about school down there? You got a six-year-old.
Yeah, they just announced yesterday that we will be online through January. So we are figuring that out. Yep. So again, I will say we've been, to your point earlier about just all the educators working so hard, we've been on the receiving end as a parent, just so appreciative of everything everyone's been doing. So
yeah.
We've recognized how challenging it is and have just appreciated that. So we're looking forward to a good school year remotely, which will be great.
It'll be a good school year. It'll be a great thing to, and I'll tell you, when we this will pass, like everything else, we will look back on it and say we did our best. We did
Absolutely.
Our best. Can't grow with it. Kirsten, thanks a million. And again, thanks for being a good sport with the phone call. I really appreciate this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for chatting. Talk to you soon.
Stay safe, please. Stay safe.
You too.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye. Kirsten Carr, everybody. Kirsten is the Senior Program Director of Student Expectations at the Council of Chief School Officers. I apologize for my sound of my voice. All of a sudden, I just had a coughing fit. Okay, so I really want to thank her for, A, putting up with me today and the challenges of the phone call, et cetera. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio, and please go over to join our equity consortium at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.